This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Robert Sherman, also a businessman, business leader, political advisor, and podcast host, consulted on presidential and senatorial, congressional, and gubernatorial races, has spoken. He says, by now, every Jew in America should understand what time it is. The mobs are in the streets. The chants are explicit. Free Palestine, from the river to the sea, death to Israel, death to America. Synagogues have been defaced. Jewish-owned businesses targeted. American flags burned alongside Israeli ones. And what do we hear from most of our political leaders in Washington? Mealy-mouthed condemnations, tepid, both sides, platitudes, and cowardice dressed up as diplomacy. Michael Rappaport said it bluntly when he warned, the cavalry is not coming to save the Jews. Let's not kid ourselves, writes Robert Sherman. We're living in a time of renewed and emboldened anti-Semitism. But this is not the cowardly anti-Semitism that hides behind online anonymity. This is a full-throated, open, proud brand, Jew brand, Jew hatred that is now mainstream on our college campuses, in our city streets, and in our legislative halls. We've seen this before. We know how this movie ends and still cling to the illusion that America's institutions will protect us. The reality, he says, is that Jews in America are being abandoned. This is why we must now organize publicly and decisively to create a Jewish self-defense force in America, an updated domestic version of the Haganah, or Haganah. Well, welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Not exactly a thrilling way to introduce the program today, but then again, anti-Semitism isn't thrilling, and neither is persecution. Today we take a look at the path of persecution, what pathway it takes. Have we seen this before? In fact, the past reveals the present, and we're going to take a look at this in a very interesting way as we look ultimately at the power of pressure, the power of pressure that is increasing in not only America, but all over the world, not just with regard to anti-Semitism, but with regard to the persecution of Christians. Last evening, I had the opportunity, if you could call it that, it wasn't a point of pleasure, but it was provocative and needful, that I came across a special movie presentation of the time of Hitler's taking over in Germany and how it affected the people. It wasn't focused on Hitler, it was focused on the people. It was focused on children. It was focused on mothers and fathers and children and how they dealt with the situation as persecution began to ramp up. First of all, there were chants and there was all kinds of insinuations coming through social, not social media per se, but passed along through government agencies and on the radio and so on, that the Jews were vermin and that they were filled with lice and all kinds of ways to try to demean and cause the public to look with a scant eye at Jewish people. Well, that's how it began. But that's not how it ended. It began that way, but it ended violently. So violently that one would find it very difficult not to terminate your viewing of such an image. Such was my wife's response. About a half an hour through the two-hour program, she says, Chuck, I can't watch this anymore. It's too unnerving. And I understood. But then I realized I needed to watch this. I needed to see this, as painful as it was. Not encouraging, but as painful as it was, I needed to see it because we are about to see the same thing happen again. In fact, we are seeing the same thing happen again, just in different ways. We're seeing it happen to Christians, not just Jewish people, but Christians. As I was told from Jerusalem several months ago by a broadcaster there, she said, Chuck, first it comes to the Saturday people and then to the Sunday people. In other words, it's coming. Don't kid yourself it's not coming. It is coming, and we need to be prepared. And that's why I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, because the Lord put it upon my heart that this was a very, very perilous time, just as the Scripture said was going to take place. Paul talked about perilous times. Jesus talked about perilous times in Matthew chapter 24. These are those times, but we're not prepared. Just as the Jewish people were not prepared then, we're not prepared today. Should we form some sort of an organized, decisively created self-defense force in America? Is that what Jews should do? Is that what Christians should do? I'm not convinced that that is the way it should happen. On the other hand, what do you do? How do you respond? The Jewish people did not respond well in Germany. They thought it was their home. It was a place where they lived and they worked and they were successful. But then it didn't turn out that way. Things began to turn very rapidly. And so as I watched this unfold last evening, my spirit was so deeply, deeply troubled. And I realized I needed to see this, because this is exactly the picture of what is about to transpire to American Christians. Yes, Jewish people in America, if it can happen to Jewish people in America, why can't it happen to Christian people in America? It not only can, it is, and will continue. And what begins as a small snowball ends up being a massive, massive snowball that you cannot stop as it rolls down the hill and creates increasing pressure and force to become almost unstoppable. So we're going to talk about that here on the program today, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's Conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. By the way, if you don't have the book When Persecution Comes, you need to get it. You may not want to get it, but you need to get it. Just like I didn't want to see that program last evening, I knew I needed to see it. I needed to see it for your sake and for mine. I needed to see it for my family's sake. I needed to see it for everyone's sake who is in the sphere of my influence, because what was demonstrated there is happening all over again, as they say, deja vu, all over again. When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, if you don't have it, $22. It's a $22 book, $20 on our website, saveus.org. We'll put it in your hands. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. You're not going to be disappointed. It's a book of encouragement to strengthen, to equip us. We'll be back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Why would such a movie as I saw last evening be shown on Hallmark's Family Channel? Hallmark's Family Channel. You might say, well, that doesn't seem very family-oriented. Oh, it was extremely family-oriented, because it was all about families and how they had to deal with the increasing persecution, how they had to hide from the Gestapo, and how the Gestapo came in and broke up families. took the children away from their parents, and then took mothers, lined them up against a wall, and shot them in cold blood. No hesitation whatsoever. All about families. And what had how families were affected and how children were frightened and how the lead person in this particular movie, historical as it was, had been responsible, even though she was not a Jew, she felt so powerfully overwhelmed by the need to do something to help that she offered up essentially her own life, sacrificed her own life in order to save 2,500 Jewish children from slaughter. Ultimately, she survived through beatings of the Gestapo and so on, and ended up marrying the young man who also had suffered as he tried to help deliver children from the hand of the Gestapo. And they ended up marrying in 1947. She died at the age of 98 in 2008. An amazing historical story that presented the obvious path of persecution. They're known as anti-Semitism with regard that turned into genocide with regard to the Jews. But the same path is already developing immensely across our world, friends, toward Christians. Let's go back to the article from Robert Sherman concerning why American Jews need a self-defense force. He said, the reality is that Jews in America are being abandoned. This is why we must now organize publicly and decisively to create a Jewish self-defense force in America, an updated domestic version of the Haganah. We are in a similar moment now. The threats we face aren't hypothetical. They're immediate, present, and physical. Jewish schools and synagogues now require armed guards. A Jewish defense organization must be national, volunteer-based, and strategically structured, focused on deterrence, protection, and training. We're not talking about vigilantes. We're talking about self-preservation. Of course, this will make some people uncomfortable, he said. Self-defense should make the right people uncomfortable, those who are too cowardly to confront evil and are too naive to recognize the danger. And there's the problem, friends. Naivete. Naive, thinking this too shall pass. Oh, this is just, and then we make an excuse and we have a cover story for how this little thing doesn't really matter and that doesn't matter and this doesn't matter and why this persecution of Christians over here didn't matter and why, oh, well, that was in another country. We always have a way of dismissing the reality of what's taking place in front of us. So the writer goes on to say, Jews were massacred in Israel, and half of America justified it. We're already under siege. This isn't about politics, it's about survival. Those who want us dead are not hiding it anymore. They shout their genocidal slogans with pride. Allahu Akbar, while storming through Jewish neighborhoods. A global intifada is metastasizing, and the borders between Gaza and the West have blurred. The enemy is no longer just in the Mideast. It's here. We're at a crossroads. We can either continue begging the same broken system to protect us, or we can take responsibility for our own survival. And he's talking about in America. He said no one is coming to save us, because from this moment on, we must be ready to save ourselves. Well, that is a viewpoint coming from a Jewish man writing passionately concerning his observation of what has happened to the Jewish people in the past, what happened in Germany, a supposedly enlightened society. That is where Martin Luther came from, you know. And then looking at what's happening in the United States of America, give me your tired, your hungry, your yearning mass, your mass is yearning to breathe free. I lift my hand, my light behind the open door, however that goes. Yeah, that's this country. but not so much anymore. We're not talking about illegal immigrants here. We're talking about people who are here rightfully. We're talking about people who are citizens here, perhaps have lived here their whole lives, raised their families here, and because of their ethnicity or religion, that is, because they take the Bible at face value, the Old Testament, they are rejected. While Muslims have been received and exalted, even in New York City, as the next, perhaps, mayor of New York City. It's pretty unbelievable. And yet that's a city that has the highest percentage of, the highest number of Jewish residents in America. Anywhere outside of Israel, the highest number of Jewish residents, New York City. Yet they just lifted up a dedicated fundamentalist Muslim to be the Democrat candidate for mayor of New York. Well, let's move on from there. Let's take a look at some of the things that are happening around the world with regard to Christians. For instance, a massacre of over 100 villagers in a Christian area of Nigeria now has elicited a response from the president of Nigeria. Days after a massacre of more than 100 people in a predominantly Christian village in the Benue state of Nigeria, the country's president called for action against the assailants, even as a local traditional ruler tried to correct him and others about the nature of such attacks. In other words, tried to put a spin on it to justify it. While some Muslim Fulani herdsmen still assert a claim on obsolete grazing routes of lands that have been owned for decades by predominantly Christian farmers, the cattlemen heavily armed assaults of the last several years on villages, largely weaponless farmers, contradict the herder-farmer clash narrative. In other words, the story that's used to justify all the killings. Wrong diagnosis will always lead to a wrong treatment. This is war. Herdsmen have launched unprovoked attacks on largely defenseless Christians. The assailants attacked the Yalawata main market, setting buildings on fire, mutilating and burning the bodies of victims, some of whom were trapped in their homes. The assailants chanted the jihadist slogan, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater, in the attack. From April 1st to June 1st, 270 people were reportedly killed in Benue State alone. Over 5,700 lives have been lost to terrorist violence in that same state since 2011, with more than 150,000 people displaced. More than 6,500 people were reportedly displaced in a single wave of violence just this month. In light of the Yalawata massacre, the U.S. Commissioner on International Religious Freedom reiterated its call for the U.S. Department of State to designate Nigeria as a country of particular concern for tolerating or promoting egregious violations of religious rights. The abhorrent violence in Nigeria's Middle Belt and the systematic, ongoing, and egregious attacks throughout Nigeria against Christians are indications that government prevention efforts are failing and not protecting vulnerable religious communities. The Fulani adhere to radical Islamist ideology. They adopt a comparable strategy to Boko Haram and another organization and demonstrate a clear intent to target Christians and potent symbols of Christian identity. Christian leaders in Nigeria have said they believe herdsmen attacks on Christian communities in Nigeria's Middle Belt are inspired by their desire to forcefully take over Christian lands and impose Islam, as decertification has made it difficult for them to sustain their herds. Nigeria remained among the most dangerous places on earth for Christians, according to Open Doors' 2025 World Watch list of countries where it's most difficult to be a Christian. Of the 4,476 Christians killed for their faith worldwide last year, 3,100, or 69% of them, were in Nigeria. A Somali mother of three loses her home rejected by her husband for accepting Christ after watching a Jesus film. She was summarily shot by her husband. An 8-year-old boy in Indonesia dies after beating at the hands of several Muslim students in a public school. He is a Christian boy. He died from a ruptured appendix days after the older Muslim students beat him so severely he required continuous hospital treatment and did not survive. These are just illustrations, friends, of what is happening in our world, and we're getting these reports every single day, and I can't bear to come before you and bring these reports every day or even every week. It's just too much. But pressure is building, and pressure has immense power. Pressure creates, but it also destroys. It creates diamonds, but it also has explosive power, accomplishing a task in quick order that otherwise might take hours, decades, or centuries. So, we understand a bit about the nature of pressure, but in America, not quite so much. In America, we have things pretty nice, pretty smooth, generally speaking, and comparatively speaking. But the pressure is building. The pressure is building because the rejection of Jesus Christ and the Bible itself has increased so much that it's almost incomprehensible to believe we could have lost so much ground in the last 40 years. 30 years ago, 92% of Americans believed in God. 86% believed they were Christians. Today, those numbers have dropped precipitously. Today, somewhere around 50 to 60% claim to be Christians, but only maybe 8% at best are what you would call evangelical Christians. Christianity, the faith once delivered to the saints, is facing increasing pressure. It's facing pressure politically. When you realize that of the blue states, politically speaking, in the country, they are all run and filled by Democrats, and the Democrat people continually elect people who are virtually 100% contrary to the word, will, and ways of God as expressed in the Bible. The only thing that motivates them is feelings. Everything else has been thrown out. And so there's intense pressure that builds within the society, just as it did in Germany. Pressure against Christians, true Christians, not cultural Christians, not touchy-feely Christians, but real Christians, the ones who truly take God at his word, who don't just say they believe the Bible from cover to cover and the cover too, but actually live according to it, or at least attempt to do so. And then there's great envy out there. Great envy against those who will stand for the Lord in the power of his might against evil works. And envy is very powerful, very, very destructive. And it's what crucified Jesus. Even Pontius Pilate noted when Jesus was brought before him for trial that it was but for envy that the Jewish leaders brought him. Joseph was thrown into a pit because of the envy of his brothers, who were the children of Israel. Paul suffered persecution because of envy. All the disciples suffered persecution because of envy. It's insidious, and it has no bounds, and it creates a pressure level that is hard to believe. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. Today we're talking about the pressure that is developing in the path of persecution. The path of persecution begins somewhat modestly. We see it happening in places around the world, different places, and we think, well, we're pretty much immune from that. We see it happening in certain places in the country through legal system, legal pressure, and so on. And we think, well, that's just that. That's just, these are just isolated situations. But the isolated become more and more and more frequent until we begin to see that the pressure is building and building and building and building. Where is it leading? Well, we don't hear pastors being teaching the people about it. We don't have pastors including somehow encouraging the people to be able to stand and to know how to do so when persecution comes. They're not prepared. They're presumed to be prepared if they profess to be a Christian. The pastor presumes that they're prepared or that they're self-preparing, but he does nothing to prepare them because he's afraid. What is the pastor afraid of? What is the parachurch leader afraid of? What is the broadcaster afraid of? What are the authors afraid of? They're afraid that they'll lose their audience, that some people won't follow them anymore. They don't want to hear that. Therefore, they won't put their nickel in the plate. They won't purchase their book. They won't do that. Won't do this. So they have to have a following. And then what would God do if I lose some of my following? That's how the thinking goes. And so people are not being prepared. And I think it's tantamount to a kind of spiritual child abuse not to prepare God's people who are trusting us as leaders to prepare them. A parent can't wait around for his child to feel like he wants to be discipled, for his child to feel like he wants to be disciplined, for the child to feel like he wants to be told what he should do, what he should not do, and how to go about it. No, that's the parent's job. That's the parent's job. But we've been so interested in trying to make friends of our kids rather than parenting them. And the same thing is happening in the spiritual realm. In our homes, yes, but also in our churches. In the entire so-called evangelical economy, this spirit has gripped for the past 50, 60 years the entire evangelical economy, running which books get published, which broadcasts get aired, and so on. What people are recognized, it's pretty amazing. I've been on the inside for a very, very long time, and I see what happens and why it happens. And it's not something to brag about. But so we're actually on the path to increasing persecution. And the past, if we're willing to look at the past, it reveals or shines the light on the present so that we can actually see the direction, the trajectory of history and prophecy that are now coming together for persecution. As Jesus said, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you. Why do you think you shall be different? You will be different than your Lord. That's a good question, isn't it? Why do I think that I would be different than my Lord? If Jesus said, if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you, then what do you say? I'm asking the question. It's a rhetorical question. That's how we should be reading our Bibles. What do I say when Jesus says that? Do I agree? And if I agree, then what am I doing about it? What am I doing in response? As a parent, as a mother, as a father, as a grandparent, am I diligently seeking to prepare my sons, my daughters, my grandchildren, and so on for the times that are coming? You can't give everybody's attention. That's true. You can't. You can't force your way in, but we do have a responsibility. And even when there's rejection, we still have the responsibility. Jesus came unto his own, but his own received him not. Did he stop? No. But as many as would receive him, so he kept going, kept bringing the message, kept bringing it faithfully, even though the pressure came increasingly against him because of the message and because of the envy of those who did not want to go that direction, i.e. leadership. It is leadership that lays the foundation for persecution through envy. And envy has no bounds. It comes in subtly, but bites like a serpent at the end. And envy persecutes the faithful, the truly faithful. It has demonic power to place immense pressure through those caught up in its widening web, poisoning true reason, lending inevitably to persecution of all others not so trapped in its tyrannical grasp. That's where Satan was. In the Holy Mount of God, envious beyond measure, said, I'm so great, I'm so cool, I'm so beautiful, I will be like the Most High God. Thus, defying or rejecting the Creator's authority, his devious vision was to cause worshipers of God under God's authority to the dominion of Satan himself, the devil. And that's what's happening. Satan is engineering an unprecedented pressure system, culminating with the imposition of the infamous mark of the beast to compel all people on the planet to accept and submit to his authority, including all who currently profess allegiance to and salvation through Yeshua Jesus the Messiah. And because of that immense pressure being brought to bear to effectuate Satan, Lucifer's, whatever name you want to call him, the accuser, because of his supreme envious system, many are going to fall away from their faith in Jesus. They're going to shift their allegiance to Satan's counterfeit and imposter Christ, the son of perdition. So the earthly incarnation of Satan will exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That's what the Apostle Paul said. And it's going to happen. You wonder how such a thing could happen, but it is happening. It's just coming in slowly. And we're trying to shine the light here on this program. We're trying to shine the light on how these things are developing so that you and I will be prepared. So it will not take you unawares. The Apostle Paul said, look, these things should not take us unawares. We know, we have been told, we have the light. Why don't we walk in it? That's what he said to the Thessalonian church. So, look, my latest book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, is going to help every person who takes this, who is willing to take a closer look and look at their own life. This is a book about, you could say it's almost like a coach helping professing Christians, our fellow believers, to know how to win, to know how to be able to stand when the team coming against us seems to be impossible to defeat. What do I do? How do I stand? That's what this book is about. When persecution comes, preparing hearts for perilous times. It's a $22 book, yours for $20 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. You know, some people might think, well, it sounds like you're just about promoting books. No, it's not about promoting books. I don't write books to make money. That may surprise you. I've not made money on any of the books that we've written. That may surprise you as well, because they're not written so as to make money. If they were written to make money, I would write them differently. I know how to do that. You have to say certain kinds of things and not say certain other things in order to make money. But that's not why I'm doing what I do. That's not what God called me to do. He didn't call me to make money. I made money as a practicing lawyer for 20 years. And the Lord said, son, you've been pleading the cause of men long enough. I want you to plead my cause in the land as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation in America's greatest crisis hour. Here on the near edge of the second coming. I said, yes, sir. And that's what we've been doing for the past 32 years. 30 years on the air. And a couple of years before that, in the forming of Save America Ministries, to rebuild the foundations of faith and freedom in my homeland, the land of my birth, America. We're getting ready to celebrate the 250th political anniversary of the country this year. July 4th sets it off. That's the political anniversary. But the beginning of the country started over 400 years ago in 1607. The landing at Jamestown. In 1620, pilgrims in Massachusetts. In 1630, the landing of the Puritans in Massachusetts Bay. That's where the country began, over 400 years ago. Where are we going today? Are we going to be prepared as persecution comes?
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click sell church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Our viewpoint determines destiny. Our viewpoint concerning the matter of persecution. We opened the program talking about the growing, frightful anti-Semitism, which is basically a word for persecution against Jews. That's what it is. That's what anti-Semitism is. And that is growing now against Christians worldwide, including in the United States of America. Who would have ever believed such a thing would happen? When I was a young boy, learning all of the great songs of our country, "This is my country, land of my birth, grandest on earth, I pledge thee my allegiance, America the bold, for this is my country to have and to hold." I would have never believed that we'd be looking, that I would be doing what I'm doing today, addressing Christian citizens concerning how our own country has rebelled against God. One entire political party has openly rebelled against God. So you can see the tension that we're under. It's called pressure. Pressure increases. There are so many of those great songs, the great political, not political songs, they're not political at all. We don't have time to go into them today. Maybe we'll do that next week. But for the balance of the time today, we want to take a look at Jesus and the power of pressure. And actually, it's painful, but precisely this very ultimate expression of the power of pressure of which Jesus lamentedly warned his disciples. And that message is not marketable. You can't sell it. Nobody will buy it. But Jesus' untempered warning to protect and preserve our faith amid the final assault of envy-induced pressure and persecution, here's what he had to say. And we need to receive these words with patient endurance. He said, "The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? Fear them not, therefore, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness," said Jesus, "that speak you in the light. And what you hear in the ear, that preach upon the housetops, no matter what they say. And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. For are you not more value than many sparrows? Whosoever therefore," listen to this, "whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven." You know, there are an awful lot of people that are going to deny Jesus. Some people are going to say, "Well, I crossed my fingers. I denied him, but I didn't really mean it." If it came out of your mouth, you meant it. Jesus said, "By every word that comes out of your mouth, you will be judged. By your words, you will be justified, and by your words, you will be condemned," he said. "For it's out of the mouth, out of the heart, that the mouth speaks." No matter what you might say you intended, if you deny your Lord, you have chosen your side. Jesus went on to say, "Don't you think that I'm come to send peace on earth? I came not to send peace, but a sword." In other words, to divide. "I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household." In other words, we're going to expect to experience persecution, rejection, some of the most painful types right within your own household. Have you experienced that yet? You most likely will. The more closely you attend to the word, will, and ways of the Lord, the more likely you will experience that kind of rejection. And that kind of rejection can grow into an ever deeper form of rejection hatred, animosity, and even violence. Jesus said, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end shall be saved." Now, if you'd like to know where that comes from, you can go to Matthew chapter 10, verses 22 to 39, and you'll be able to find where that came from. So the power and pressure of envy has many expressions. Sometimes it's not always apparent on the surface. And so I want to share with you some of those. They're not necessarily exhaustive, but it's a list of many expressions of that kind of envy that through the power of pressure inure to the persecution of the saints. So here they are. Peer pressure. It's not just for our kids. It's for us as even pastors are subject to peer pressure. I've watched it. It's very painful to see. Secular and cultural intolerance. Suppression of speech as to biblical morality. Removal or prohibition of Christian symbols. Intolerance of Christians while tolerating other religions. Labeling Christians with false characterizations. Claiming Christians as a threat to democracy. Criminalization of Christianity or biblical morality. Suppression of religious freedom. Utilizing laws to limit worship and Bible studies. Government sanctions, bribery, and threats, including imposing fines. Coercion for control under cover and color of political correctness, multiculturalism, and religious pluralism. Usurpation of parental authority. In fact, we have a case, a Supreme Court case, that just came down today. I believe it was from Maryland. Parents very concerned that their children in public school are being forced to undergo indoctrination for LGBTQ and all that kind of messaging. The Supreme Court said, no, you should not have to undergo that. That indeed is coming against the your religious expression and your freedom of religion, and that cannot be allowed. But these things are constantly before us in the courts, aren't they? Usurpation of parental authority. Medical mandate rejecting all moral and religious exemptions. Imposition of anti-biblical authority under color of law, including environmentalism. Cultural mandate to conform or be ostracized from civil society. Governmental mandate to conform to global digitization and its accompanying mark. Inquisition and increasing intimidation. Any or all of these expressions owe their life force to increasing hatred driven by envy. The motivations themselves may be overt, open and obvious, or may be covert, hidden and camouflaged. But to be aware and forewarned is to be forearmed in faith to persevere. Without compromise, without capitulation, yet continuing in a spirit of humility. And as Jesus said, he that endures to the end shall be saved. So, how do we endure to the end? Well, we have to prepare for the blessed hope. We prepare for the blessed hope of the church, the coming of the Lord. And he said that these things are going to take place before his return. So we accept that. We accept that that's going to take place. We don't ask for it. We don't revel in it, but we rejoice that we're counted worthy to suffer as did Jesus. Jesus said, "Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets which were before you." So, the attitude of our minds and hearts is going to have everything to do with whether we're going to be able to stand
in the evil day as persecution mounts against Christians. And it is mounting. In England, it's shocking to see what's actually happened there. Just totally shocking. Where the churches are being taken over by either bars or turned into Muslim mosques. Our mother country, the home of such giants as Charles Wesley, John Wesley, founder of Methodism, writer of so many of our hymns, the founder of the Salvation Army, just so many there. And yet it's turned into a godless enterprise away from the God who made and preserved them a nation. We're told by Francis Scott Key in our national anthem that we should praise the Lord who hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. That should not be a political statement. That should be a spiritual, personal statement. And this be my motto, in God is my trust. When that happens and the people as a whole are worshiping the Lord in truth and in humility, obeying his voice, then the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. It does say take bravery, friends, to stand in the evil day. It's going to take courage, a level of courage that most people have never had to experience. But as the famous philosopher Gaty once said, wealth lost, something lost, courage lost, all lost. Alexander Solzhenitsyn came over here from the Russian gulags and declared, I believe it was at Harvard University, declared that the number one characteristic of the weakening of the West was the loss of courage. The loss of courage. And I believe it was in 1979 when he made that statement. Imagine what's happened since then. The path to persecution, that pathway is defined by the past. And as we look at what happened in the past, we see where it ends in the present. So we must be prepared. When persecution comes, preparing hearts for perilous times. That's why I wrote the book. And I believe that God moved upon my heart to write this book at this particular point in time. We should not be terrified, but triumphant. Hope is promised. The blessed hope of the church lies straight ahead with the soon coming of our Lord. But that hope will be supremely tested to confirm our trust, requiring preparation. So in the pages of When Persecution Comes, you're going to, from the heart, engage in that preparation for the hope ahead. I hope you're ready. $22 book, yours for $20, friends. Help unfold this message in your mind, in your heart. Use it as a family for family discussion. Every chapter has some very probing questions. You will find no end of discussion. Oh, let me tell you, you'll have discussions coming out the ears. If you think you're not able to lead, just read the book, bring it before your family, and there will be no end of discussion. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, When Persecution Comes. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries at $6 for postage and handling. And please take seriously the need to undergird. If you value what we're doing here, don't think that the other guy is doing it.
You've
come along and join.
Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.